Tampa Bay Lightning, they're back in this one in a big way. Winners 4-2, doubling up the Islanders last night. Welcome to Hockey Central. Gary Galley from Hockey Night in Canada joins us at the bottom of the hour. And plenty to get to today, including a conversation about the future of Zach Hyman and whether that future exists in Toronto or elsewhere. Meantime, Bornie Stewie, good afternoon. Gentlemen, I want to start by talking about something not hockey, although it might bleed into hockey. Bornie, I'm just going to hand this whole show over here to our man Anthony Stewart to kick it off, because guess what Stewie did today, Justin?
What'd he do? I don't know.
He spoke to impressionable young children at Birchmount, and he's here to tell us all about it. Stewie, what type of advice did you have to the young impressionables at Birchmount?
I said, if you want to be like me, you better score 35 in junior. No, it's great talking, because that is a pretty prestigious school, the athlete program, BEAT program, where it helped mold me into become the athlete that I was too. So anything I can do to give back, because that program gave so much to me. So I told them the one story. I was so excited about going to school the first day. I got my outfit all ready to go, grade 9. I forgot my gym shorts. So do you have fitness testing the day one? I show up without my gym shorts, and I had to do the 400-meter run in Paco jeans, size 38 waist, 34 length, and I still ran a 56. So I set the tone early in the athlete program. So it was great. It was a great cause.
Dude, that's awesome. What kind of stuff do kids ask you? I'm always curious about that. I mean, you're someone that, you know, went through it, played junior, went to the NHL, transitioned to broadcasting. What do you get from them?
They asked, are you rich? And I said, and I had to go now into like an economics breakdown, talking about escrow and taxes and agents and kids and dogs and all that. So they asked about the glitz and glamour.
So your answer was no, Stewie, to be clear. Yeah.
So I'm Anthony Stewart here to tell you, did you know that children want to be fed every day? Like you feed them
relentless.
Yesterday and they want to get fed again today. Like, what's up? And your dog too.
What a leak.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. That's outstanding. To last night, first thing I want to get to before we get to the game, I want to get to the moment. The one that everyone was talking about last night that bleeds into today. And it's a conversation that continues, and that is goalie interference. And what is it? And Adam Pellick pushing Braden Point into Semyon Varlamov, and somehow Braden Point ends up with the penalty. Stewie, we'll start at your end. How do you make sense, or can you, of that play and that call?
I totally forgot about the play, because I just remembered the stress that's going to come with me trying to explain my point of view of things. And I'll start off by saying, yeah, it's 100% Pellick's fault. You can't be pushing another guy into your goal. You got to protect your goaltenders. But I understand why they gave the penalty to Point, because if you get into now this war of attrition, now you don't call a penalty and settle things down. Next comes the identity line showing their identification to Vasilevskiy, and then now you can make a mockery of the game. So I understand you call the penalty. It sucks that they scored, but as you see, as the game went along, they found a way to get the call back in Tampa Bay's favor. So that's not the way. That's the way it used to be. That's the way it is. I'm not sure how it's going to be in the future, but I understand why they called that 2 minutes on Point.
Justin.
Well, it's, you know, it's not a penalty on Point. You know, he is going to the net. You're allowed to go to the net, and he gets pushed in by the Islanders player. So not really sure what he's supposed to do there. Jeff, you played defense and can maybe sympathize a little bit for, like, you know, what's Pellick supposed to do? Is he supposed to just like give him a pass because he's beat? I guess that's what he's supposed to do. I think what he's trying to do is push him to the short post before he can cut in, and Point is farther in on the cut than he thinks he is, which makes the push directly at his goalie. Yeah. It's, you know, it's obviously not a smart play, but if Pellick thinks that's going to be the outcome, he doesn't do it. So I think he thinks he's got better position on him than he does, maybe.
There's that. One of the things that we saw, as some tried to actually defend how it could be a penalty, was that Braden Point had enough time to stop. or
not a chance,
or try to stop. To which I looked at, and the shove happened at the bottom of the hash marks as Point was trying to put the puck between his legs and get it to his forehand. Like, he doesn't have a chance to stop. And to say nothing of Semyon Varlamov is coming out to try to make the save. Like, there's no way.
The puck and Point's feet is a big point you made, Jeff. Like, he's handling, he's making a play, he's making a pickup. Like, he's pulling the puck up between his feet and looking for it to come through his feet there, and all of a sudden he's on top of Varlamov.
The one thing, and this, listen, we're all on the same page here. This play has been going on forever. Like, even when they used to have those, like, hard pegs in the posts and the nets wouldn't move, guys were still doing this. Like, they just don't care. Like, I've heard a lot of knee-jerk, well, put the pegs back and guys won't be going to the net as hard. Yes, they will. They're savages out there. They will still be going to the net this hard. The one thing that I don't understand is, and Stewie, you just sort of referenced this a second ago. You always hear from teams, don't touch our goalie. Don't touch our goalie. Don't go near our goalie. Yet defensemen in front will be the first to shove people into their goaltenders nonstop. And I don't know that I've ever heard of or heard a goalie ever blast one of his defensemen for doing it. Like, have you ever heard a goalie say, like, man, like, guy, wake up. Like, that's just, that's stupid. And then, you know, Varlamov gets pulled out of the game. Thankfully, he was okay and he came back to play the remainder of the game from the Islanders. But have you ever heard a goalie complain about it?
Not in front of the cameras, but behind the scenes, absolutely. You'll have a goaltender be like, dude, what are you doing there? So there's some goaltenders, the good ones, you know, Vokuns and Luongo, they would actually have, you know, chats with their defensemen, but, you know, they'll tell them beforehand, hey, if this is happening, you know, this is what you do in this situation. The great goaltenders, they tell you in this situation, you know what, maybe, you know, try to maybe cut them off at the post, but don't touch them because I'll get the save. But, you know, for me, that's a deterrent. If I'm Point, and this is not pointing the blame at Point, I'm slowing down because if I touch the goalie, I know I'm going to get beat up or someone's going to try to beat me up too. So that's why, you know, I cringe when I see McDavid and some of these guys cutting in at a million miles an hour, because back then you can get hit into the post, you get hit into the boards from behind, or you run the goalie, then you cause a melee. So maybe that's why I'm sitting here talking about it as opposed to playing, because I made sure I would adjust my flight pattern because I don't want to have to make a mockery or a travesty of the game and be the reason why 10 guys get beat up and now we have the Battle of Alberta times 10.
Well, I will say, so to Stewie's point, and I thought of this many times, is like part of the reasoning on the Point penalty in my mind may have been like a high stick where it's like, if you don't want to get a goalie interference penalty for running into the goalie, don't fly recklessly towards the goaltender. And I agree with that when it comes to cutting in from an angle. Like, if you want to, you know, beat the goal or a defenseman wide and cut in horizontally from like the goal line or something, you are coming at the net in a dangerous angle in a way that you might get hit into the net, you might run into the goalie. We can't tell players to not run recklessly at the goalie from straight on. Like, you're allowed to attack the net from straight away from the net. So to me, it's not a reckless play. Like, you know what I mean? Like with a high stick where it's like, it doesn't matter if it's an accident, you're supposed to control it. This Point to me felt like it didn't matter if it was an accident, you put yourself in that position. However, I don't think it should be the case when it's straight on like that.
Let's play what ifs. Let's play what ifs. What if it was Perry that crashed into the net? Would we be seeing?
I thought this exact same Palak, thing, Stewie.
You know, Palak, you can't, I'd be like, get the pitchforks. We're going hunting.
Honestly, if that's Perry, I'm like, that's on purpose. I 100% am blaming it if it's Perry.
Right? So yeah. That whole discussion just went out the window. Don't touch the goalies.
I don't know one way around it. One guy tweeted me last night, said, if you want to get rid of it, just make that an automatic goal. That'll stop defensemen from doing it. Because I don't know what's going to stop defensemen from pushing forwards into their netminders.
Imagine that. You can score a goal by running into the opposing goalie. I don't see any problems. We fixed it. Yeah, tell that guy he has a bad idea.
I just don't know how that's going to change. I really don't. Yeah. Like, look, dude, we're going to see it tonight. We're going to see it tomorrow.
We're going to have to accept watching some defensemen who are in a position to make contact with an opposing player. Let them have a pass to the net. And, you know, and it's going to be impossible to get players to do that. But
okay,
I don't know.
So here's my thing on that one. I'm glad you got us there. Because it's one thing, like, let's say we're at that place where Adam Pellick is going to give Braden Point a free pass to the net because the cost of taking a penalty there is too grave, and you can't do it.
Oh, and the risk of hurting your goalie with that.
Right. That's fine for Adam Pellick. He's a first-pairing defenseman. He's someone that's going to be on Norris ballots this year. He's not going to be like a top three or top five guy, but when the balloting all comes in, you're going to see Adam Pellick's name on there. That's one thing. So you can come back to the bench and Barry Trotz may be like, you know, sucking a lemon on it, but still, he'll get it. What if it's a third pairing guy?
Right.
That just got called up. And he's handing out a free pass to the net.
Well, I love the world where, as a forward, all I got to do is get the edge on the defenseman. He's going to give me a pass to the net. Let me play in that league. I don't think that league's going to exist.
What do you think about that, Stewie?
How about we just put the goalies in work boots and make the crease cement? So now you got to make sure you don't go in the crease. If not, you're going to dull your blades.
It's a helpful idea, Stewie. Thank you for your contribution. Right, so
the goalie's playing ball hockey. Everybody else is in the skates. Gotcha. Okay, to the game itself. So Braden Point opens it up. Brock Nelson scores on that power play where Braden Point got the penalty. Andre Palat scored when there was about 12 Tampa Bay Lightning players on the ice at the same time. Jan Ruda is the first Tampa Bay Lightning defenseman to score a goal. He makes it 3-1. Victor Hedman scores a power play goal. Matthew Barzal makes it close but too late. And that is what the game sheet says. But what do you guys say about that game? How did you see it? What did you see in it? What stands out for you, Justin?
Well, the things that make Tampa Bay special happened, like that pass from Kucherov to Point, is the type of thing that, like, only you have the elite players in the league on your team, and the vision was incredible there. Point, such a, you know, a playoff performer, knows where to go. So I thought Tampa Bay's things that make them special separated them. You know, New York is usually so good at just limiting the offense from the dangerous spots on the ice, and Tampa Bay was able to get some luck. So I thought they were deserving winners of that game. But, you know, they had to get some luck along the way. That Jan Ruda goal, you know what I was thinking of? And maybe Stewie has seen this, but in the American League, D-men used to practice to get off the ice. They used to line up five pucks on the blue line, almost touching the boards, and they couldn't get off the ice until they hit the net with five shots with the puck off the ice. So you couldn't slide them in. They had to be slap shots off the ice, hit the net, five in a row. And it is amazing how long defensemen get stuck on the ice for. My point is, Jan Ruda to hit that top corner like that, like he couldn't do that again with 100 pucks.
That looked like a courtesy shot. It's like, yeah, let me just get it on net. Oh, yeah, bar down. I'm the sickest guy out there. But, yeah. You know, I use the term, in talking about the Vegas game, they got out-defensed. I think today they got Kucherov'd. Last night they got Kucherov'd. And, yeah. Those two plays, two passes that he made, you know, that was the game. And that was an elite play, the no-look pass to Point, and then him turning up with Barzal closing in and the two guys collapsing and finding Palat. So those are elite plays. You take those two plays out of the game, that it's a different story, but that's what separates Tampa Bay from a lot of these teams. They have these players that can make these elite plays at great, great moments. And I'm not sure if you guys remember, we had John Cooper on the show last year during the break, and he mentioned talking about Palat. He's one of those guys, as the games get harder and the series get longer, he elevates his game. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does, because he scored a big, big goal last night, making it 2-1 in the second period.
You know what? I've always looked at Andre Palat, and I've seen there's like elements, and I'm going to throw some huge names here. I'm not saying that he's like these players, but there's elements of there. He's
Richard
these
Zednik.
Players light. No, Marian Hossa and Henrik Zetterberg. Like he's like Zetterberg light or Hossa light. The way that he plays, the way that he holds a stick, the way that he competes. Like he's like those. He's not those guys. Those guys are like super elite. But he's like them.
Yeah, I see that. I see the Hossa one. God, Tampa just has so many of these guys that like play hockey, but you know, have talent. I just mean that, like, unafraid of the physical confrontations, and Palat being one. But like the way Yanni Gord goes about his business, obviously the additions of Goodrow and Coleman, you know, Pat Maroon has done. You know, he's contributed in playoffs in the past. They just have so many of those guys that just aren't afraid to muck it up, but can score too.
You know what? You know what? That's a testament to. That's a testament to Syracuse. We've talked about this before. Yep. It used to always be, oh, look what the Detroit Red Wings are doing with the Grand Rapids. Leave guys there. You know, overripen was always the thing for Ken Holland. The reality about Detroit is they couldn't fit anyone from Grand Rapids into the lineup. So they had to stick them there because there were no spots available. So we came up with this whole idea that, oh, it's deliberate and they're over-ripening guys. No, they're just too good at the NHL level. And, you know, Jiří Hudler couldn't find a spot on that team. But you look at Syracuse and you look at all the players that they have developed and graduated onto the Tampa Bay Lightning. And, you know, the one exercise you can do quite easily is have a look at your Tampa Bay Lightning forwards. And outside of Steven Stamkos, because we're talking about forwards here, outside of Steven Stamkos, can you name one forward that was a first-round pick?
Is there an answer? Is there one?
The answer is zero. Outside of Steven Stamkos, who was first overall, there are zero first-round picks in that forward group. It's all second and beyond. And a lot of it is what they do in Syracuse and how they develop these guys. John Cooper himself was a coach from Syracuse, and a lot of those guys are familiar with him going back to their time in the American Hockey League. The drafting is one thing. Like, I know GMs always get ripped for draft picks, but you guys both know this. Drafting is just opening a door for you. The real key to the organization is developing players. Because no one's stepping in out of junior past the first round and walking onto your team. There are some exceptions. And Bergeron was a second-round pick, and he walked on with the Bruins. But generally, that doesn't happen. Development, I still maintain, is more important than drafting. You can still have a quote-unquote poor draft record or draft from poor positions and put significant hockey players on your team. Case in point, Tampa Bay Lightning.
Man, Syracuse gave us fits when I was with the Marlies, which is funny because you're seeing it now at the NHL level. But, you know, we went seven games in a series against them. And so this is a Marlies team with, you know, Nylander and Hyman and a lot of the guys that are on the Leafs now. And even had them down 3-1 after the first period, or maybe 3-0 in the seventh game, and then lost the series. And it was on the backs of a lot of these guys that we're talking about today. Like, they were just so hard to play. And, you know, they had those type of guys. Stewie loves to mention the guys not who get you there but get you through. They just have, like, so many of those type of guys. And in the end, you know, we couldn't hang with them despite all the talent there.
Yeah, and what's good about that is, you know, they're drafting guys, letting them develop and putting them in positions to succeed, where there's some other organizations, it's like, you know what, there's a guy in the minor, we need a body, let's call him up and just hope for the best. So they have specific plans. And, you know, I go back to, you know, my years in Florida there, look at all the guys that were first and second rounders that didn't really pan out. And I think that was because of the lack of development. And I think that has to do sometimes with, you know, having a proper affiliate. You know, when I was in Florida and in Rochester, it was a split affiliate between Buffalo and Florida, two different teams. So it was sort of like, well, let's just throw them down in the jungle and hopefully we will grab a couple kitty cats and they turn into lions, where that's not a specific plan. So you could see, you know, teams like Tampa Bay, where they have guys in and they're coming out of the jungle, you know, already full-bred lions ready to go and plug in and have productive careers. So, you know, I just get upset because there's so many guys that fell through the cracks that, you know, were good hockey players, but that lack of development and lack of, you know, path at the, or light at the end of the tunnel, it's really hurt a lot of guys' careers.
100% true. I'm bobbleheading everything you're saying. 100% true.
Yeah.
Let's park a little time here to talk about Nikita Kucherov. And I can't decide what's more spectacular about him, his ability to find passing lanes or his ability to release the puck without even making it look like he's rolling his wrists. I mean, it's on his stick and then it's off his stick. The conversation around Kucherov this playoffs has all revolved around the cap and the little dance that Tampa did. And some would say it's a coincidence. Some would say there's no such thing as coincidences when they fall in favor like this for one player in one organization. But you saw it last night. Three assists. Guy's got 22 points in 13 games. He was phenomenal last night. Like, I don't know how you find, and this at the NHL level, how you find as many passing lanes as Kucherov does on a consistent basis. To me, Justin, it's staggering. That is a skill, and we always talk about you can't teach touch and you can't teach touch and you can't teach goal scoring. I don't know that you can teach that kind of passing.
Yeah, there's a level of what guys like him do that is not something that happens at a hockey school. It's a processing between your ears that maybe we'll get there in terms of teaching players how to think the way guys like that do. You know, he mentioned after the game last night, sometimes I'm thinking what Point's going to be thinking or his teammates are going to be thinking. You know, so like, imagine how many steps ahead of the play you have to be. To be like, all right, what's he going to think if this goes here? You know, like to really make that happen in the time that hockey develops. That's how you end up with a Hart Trophy. Like, that's not normal good. That's different good. And again, to your point, I don't think that's something that if you don't have it, I don't think we can give it to you, unfortunately. That's just an unbelievable level of the way his brain looks and sees things unfolding.
I'm going to go a little bit deeper into this inception and say, I think it's just sort of the philosophy of hockey now. And, you know, back when I played 10, 15 years ago, guys used to cheer the sick pass and you wanted to make sick passes in practice. But I think now the Canadian or North American way, it's all about the goals. And I'm seeing at the minor hockey level where I'm seeing 14, 15 year old Russian players make passes. I'm like, ooh, how'd you find that lane? Whereas ever players are just, you know, pucks in deep, Kent reading it up, but Kucherov's on a whole different level. He processes the game, and you know, it's almost like a video game the way that he finds those lanes, because it's not even there, but when he makes the pass, you're like, oh yeah, I see how he made it, but you have no idea how he made that pass. Like, even on that Hedman one, I think Hedman was a little bit surprised with that it came through, you know, six sticks and five bodies.
It is remarkable. You know, the only guy, I mean, Gretzky was like this, but the one guy, you know, just hearing both you guys talk about opening passing lanes and how it exists between your ears and thinking two, three steps ahead. I love Adam Oates. And I'm hearing you guys talk about this and like, this is Adam Oates. Like, this is how Adam Oates thought. This is how Adam Oates played. This is Adam Oates. Like, to me, he was like the premier playmaker in the history of the game. Period. I was so happy when that guy made it to the Hockey Hall of Fame, because I don't know that in my lifetime, I mean, Gretzky always gets excluded from every conversation because that's just...
It is funny, planet. Isn't it?
Different planet.
It honestly is. It's like, yeah, the best pit blasters in the league, you don't even like mention him because he's just like, yeah, well, it's Gretzky.
You can't. It's like, it's different. Gretzky. Like, that's
so what's the pushback? So what's the pushback with him now that's working with young players now, teaching them the game? And why wouldn't you want a guy like that teaching the next generation of players and the next guys coming up about the game?
Some coaches don't like their guys working... Like, Adam is a very headstrong person. Adam has a very specific way in very specific ways. He feels players should be trained, how they should be trained, and what their instincts should be, where they should be on the ice, etc. He's huge on, you know, changing players' sticks, you know, changing the lie of the stick. You know, if it's a higher lie, you're less prone to get a concussion, etc. That's the level that Oates thinks at, and that can really rub up against coaches and what they want their players to be doing. I know it's been a source of friction between some players and their NHL coaches. And I know there has been in the past situations where it hasn't always been smooth, let's just say. But I'm telling you, man, you talk to players, like whether it's, I don't know, Mark Scheifele, for example, or Jack Eichel, or whomever that Adam works with, you should hear the guys talk about what Oates does with them. And Adam always talks about how boring it is. He's like, his great line is always, get the toys off the ice. You know, like, you know, all that Power Edge Pro stuff, all that pep training, Stewie. Like, he's like, when are you jumping over tires when you're playing hockey? He's like, everything that I do has to have a very practical, functional application from the game. And we do it over and over and over. And it is really, really boring. But I make better players.
Yeah, like, and I asked...
Get the toys off the ice.
Yeah, and I trained Devontae Smith-Pelly this past January, and he had this shot where the puck's coming cross seam, and it's almost like a scoop snapshot 1T Brett Hall drop the knee. I haven't really even seen that offhand. But yeah. It's not a one-timer. It's not a snapshot, but it's just like almost like a scooping of the puck, but it's just so accurate. I'm like, where did you learn that? I've never seen that shot before. He's like, oh, Oatsy taught me. And I'm like, oh man, get this guy in a peeper.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I've seen it with my own eyes and just seeing how meticulous it is, because he, like, there was a shot that I've never seen that. And I'm like, you know, I can't afford him, but let me call him to teach some of my guys that, because I cannot teach that shot. I had a pretty good wrist shot, snapshot, but this shot was different. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
There's some guys who hit that little like a normal side, just a normal one-timer, but it's like a little heel cutter one-timer. Like Kucherov kind of has that off his back foot a little bit. Like
that's the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
I don't understand how that happens, man. And then, I'm the same way. As much as you teach me, I don't even know if I could figure it out.
How did we get to talking about Adam Oates here? We're supposed to be talking about Tampa Bay and the New York Islanders, but here we go. But no, like when you talk about Kucherov and finding players and thinking like 2-3 steps ahead, and I'm trying to put my brain in this guy's brain, like that's Adam Oates territory right now. Okay, so final thought on this one. Gary Galley joins us after the break. Justin, we'll start with you. Tampa jumps back into this one. Do we think Game 3 looks more like Game 1 or Game 2 now that Tampa has some wind behind their sails here?
I think more like Game 1, but not necessarily in that the Islanders win. I just, you know, it's not often you're able to put up four on them and find those exact seams the way that they did, or hit that elbow crossbar on a back heel slapper from the blue line. You know, it's tough to score. So I think it's going to be tight in Nassau Coliseum. You know, the Islanders do what they do, and it's a good thing Tampa has a lot of guys who can get through the traffic, because I expect a lot of it in Game 3.
Stewie.
Yeah, I think the Islanders are really going to take advantage of the home ice that they have these next two games. And Tampa Bay, the building was pretty quiet. Other than that guy doing the Ric Flair, you know, banging his head on the glass at the end of the game there, it was pretty quiet there. But I'm excited to hear those fans in the Islanders, because they were literally that last series, they were bringing down the building. So I think the Islanders are going to get some juice from that. If they have a little bit more discipline, because we know the Tampa Bay's firing at a 40% clip. Good discipline, take advantage of the crowd. I would not be surprised if they take Game 3.
Got pretty rough last night too. Hey, that was nice.
All-time hockey.
Leo Komarov and Pat Maroon and Matt Martin, I guess, had their gloves off. I come a little bit shy of calling that a real fight. Neither guy could really get an arm free.
They're too tied up, eh?
They went, yeah, right?
Too tired.
Like, yeah, that's
too tired, and they're all pretzeled up, but still, like, this is getting some good nastiness. There's a nice little bit of salt on this series. So we look forward to Game 3. And we look forward to our next guest, and that's Gary Galley from Hockey Night in Canada. He joins us in moments. More on the Islanders and the Bolts still to come. It is, don't forget, Montreal and the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. 8:30 Eastern is the pregame. Puck drops at just after 9 at T-Mobile Arena. Can the Habs jump in back into this one, or does Vegas take a 2-0 series lead? That conversation is still to come, and Gary Galley next. Keep it right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. More Hockey Central in moments. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Don't forget tonight, 8:30 Eastern, the pregame show, Hockey Central with Ron McLean. 9 o'clock, the puck drops in T-Mobile Arena. It is the Vegas Golden Knights and the Montreal Canadiens. But about last night, Tampa very much back into this one with a 4-2 victory, doubling up the New York Islanders. Series tied, headed to Game 3 at Nassau Coliseum. Here for comment on all of this is our good friend Gary Galley, former Islander, we should point out as well, and we'll get into that. Gary, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are doing well. First of all, before we get to, and we're sort of started the program by talking about this, from a defenseman's point of view, and you're a defenseman, I'm trying to get inside the brain of Adam Pellick last night. Points in front of him, going to the net, approaching Varlamov, shoves him from behind into his netminder. Is that just a situation of, I have to do something, and that's the only thing I can do right now? Explain it to us as best you can.
Well, I think the biggest thing is I think it's the danger of the goal takes over your brain as a defenseman. You know, you're getting beat to the net. You feel like, oh my God, I've been beat here. What can I do to throw this player off balance? Let him know I'm behind him, take away his thought process as he's going to the net, knowing how good point is, especially in tight. And so he gives him a good jolt to the back. And what the player doesn't know, and what Pellick couldn't know, is that he would lose his balance at the rate he was and drive into his goaltender. You don't know those things. After it happens, it's easy to go back and say, okay, you do it. But it's like when you see a guy stick his knee out on someone going around, you say, why would he do that? Well, it's a reaction. It's just you're reactionary to trying to make sure the opponent doesn't score. And I think when you do that, you know, obviously bad things can happen, and it did. And luckily he's back in their lineup. He's back, he got back in the next period. And, they got a goal off it. I mean, literally, they got a goal they didn't deserve, a power play they didn't deserve, and they got that off it right away.
Stewie.
I just wanted to ask about your point yesterday when you were talking about Tampa Bay getting involved in the extracurricular activities after the whistle. Do you think they should really stay away from that, or they got to show the Islanders that they're not going to be pushed around by a bigger team?
Well, I think you have to stand up for yourself, Stewie. I think it's really important that you do stand up for yourself. What you can't do is you can't let it distract from your game. You can't let it, every single whistle, you get into these kind of things, and then all of a sudden you're finding the distraction. If you can play within that distraction, which is what the Islanders do on a nightly basis, with that identity line and some of their players, they go out and they just try to take other players off their game. So you got to make sure that you're that player that can get in those things, but also let them go and continue to move on and play. And I think that's the one thing that I learned a little bit more about the Tampa Bay Lightning, that they can get in the pig pen a little bit and still not take away from how they play the game. And I think that was an important thing for me to watch last night. But there was a few occasions that I felt like, just whistle to whistle, get to the draw. You know, you're in full control of the game. I assume that they're going to have meetings before game three, and I think the referees are going to start taking one guy now. I don't think they're going to allow this to continue. So I fully believe there's going to be some conversations with both coaches and the referees prior to game three.
Gary, one thing we always hear about the Islanders, you know, a lot of analysts will say like, oh, well, you know, the Islanders, that's what they do, or this is who the Islanders are. But it's like, okay, are they really doing something that much different from every other team in terms of defensive play or the way they play? Do you see anything systems-wise? Do they forecheck more or less aggressively? Do they defend more or less aggressively? What is it systematically that they do different from other hockey teams?
I think that they put an extreme amount of pressure on the puck. I think they can be relentless when they really got their game going. I think they control the speed through the neutral zone as well as any team in the league. And that's a big thing when you're playing a team like the Bruins and Pittsburgh, and you're playing a team like Tampa Bay. If you can control the neutral zone, you control the pace of the game. And if you can control a team that likes to attack on the rush constantly, like they did in game one, 9-0 were the rush chances in favor of the Islanders in game one. That changed considerably in game two as the Tampa Bay Lightning made adjustments, started to stretch the puck, started to get more rush opportunities, and started to enjoy more success in the offensive zone. So when New York's on their game, and you know the grittiness of the New York Islanders is very similar. I mean, when your dad played in the Island, and they were a gritty team too. I mean, yeah, they could score, and they had some guys that were talented, but they could climb in there and get as down and dirty as you want to get, and they did. On a lot of occasions, and that was the fear of opponent having them, that you know they could play it any way they wanted. So the Islanders can play the game any way you want. They're starting to develop really good scorers. Some of their guys are really starting to find the net, with guys like Brock Nelson, obviously. Peugeot and Palmieri have been big key pickups for them over the last 2 years. Barzal, every playoff he plays in, every depth of playoff he goes into, he gets better and better. So, I mean, I think these are all good signs for a team that can play that gritty style of game, but is also going to be able to now be able to score some goals at big times. They're more than comfortable being in a game that's 2-1, being down or up, and they're more than comfortable being down 2-1 in a series, as they've proven twice. They don't get distracted, and Barry Trotz, 26 wins since he's arrived in the playoffs, he keeps them in check, and their guys know exactly what to do.
Yeah, you mentioned that on television last night going into the third. Tampa's up 2-1, and you're like, yeah, you know what? The Islanders are not going to freak out about any of this. They're quite comfortable playing with this score. Thank you very much. One of the things that was quite noticeable from the first time he was on the ice, and that is every time Matthew Barzal was out there, Tampa was trying to rough him up. Like that, like we didn't. That's not a mirage. Like we saw that. Like Tampa deliberately, as a tactic, was going after Barzal last night.
And they should. I mean, every team that plays in a playoffs in a 7-game series, and that's what you got to think. Every series has the potential of going. The sooner you start, as John Cooper says, putting ice bags on players, the better. You know, when players can't be at 100%, when they don't feel 100%, they're not going to play 100%. You hope that. Mm-hmm. They can get through injuries, and certainly we've seen players do that in the playoffs. But at the end of the day, you know, you want to continue to be hard on your opponent's good players. I think that's one thing that the Islanders do very well, And Tampa Bay, you don't win a Stanley Cup not knowing these things. People think they're a bit of a wallflower as far as physical play. They're not. They have no issue playing the physical play. To me, it's getting in the extracurricular stuff and losing players off the ice that maybe aren't good matches to lose. You've got to be careful of that. And I think that's what they've learned going forward already going into Game 3. They both talked about, you know what? We know each other. We know what to expect. We played them last year in the bubble. That's just a lot of coach talk. When you haven't seen a team all year, you can't just do it on tape. You got to feel it and play against them, feel the will of your opponent and the anxiety of your opponent in a series to really know what's going on. I think both teams know that now.
Yeah, Victor Hedman broke his goose egg in the playoffs by scoring on the power play, and you know, some people have been, I think, a little bit critical of his play as of late. You know, with regards to goals, but what does he do on a shift in, shift out basis that really takes over the game?
Just about everything. I mean, his rhythm of play coming up the ice, he's able to set the pace of play. His stick is incredible. I look at guys that have great sticks like Lidstrom. He's got great stick. His mobility is excellent. He operates a power play, can kill penalties. It was kind of surprising to see him not have any goals thus far because he does get a lot of ops to put the puck. I thought he was missing the net a lot. I think now that he's got that one, I think he's going to settle in a little bit, and I think he'll be much better moving forward as far as production-wise. But his job is to shut down Barzal, too. He's going to play against them, maybe not as much now on the island because of the line change. His job is to really take care of Barzal and not give him opportunity, and that's first and foremost. And if he does that, he helps his team have a chance to win. So he will be productive, I think, as this series moves on. But it was a bit of a shock to not see him being productive at this point in the playoffs and them still winning like they are, but that's just a bonus for them now.
Tell us your thoughts on Nikita Kucherov and what he's doing for this Lightning team. Like, my God, he looks like the guy who won the Hart Trophy a few years ago, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he can pass the puck through such a small area. He has patience to wait.
Wild.
He changes. He's very deceptive in how he passes the puck. All three passes last night were very different, but all remarkable. You know, I mean, that's the talent of Nikita Kucherov, and he can make those things happen. And also, if you're trying to take all his passes away, he'll bar down you. I mean, he's got great vision of the net. He's got, and he can pick corners. So it makes him such a double or triple threat that you got to be so careful. And I think when they want to watch him, sometimes they relax on some of the seams, and then he finds them.
How do you see the remainder of this series going? I mean, we've seen some great play from both teams. The series is split now, 1-1. You know, we always talk about adjustments that coaches make from one game to the next. You know, I'm one of these people that doesn't believe in momentum in the playoff, that these are all individual standalone games. And there's momentum within the game, but never from game to game. How do you see the rest of this playing out, Gary?
I personally think that this is going to play out in such a manner that it's going to come down to what team can execute their game plan more than anything. Every coach will tell you, get to your game plan as quickly as possible. You know, get to that game plan and execute it as best as possible. If you can't execute your game plan to the best of your ability, then you don't have a chance to win the hockey game. So for the Islanders, we know what their game plan is. We know what they have to do. They want to clog that neutral zone. They don't want to allow inside position at their net. They know that Tampa Bay feeds off that, so don't let them have that. Take that away from them. It's the way you're going to beat them. And if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know that you have to create rhythm in the ice. You need to be hard on pucks. And their stick work last night as far as intercepting pucks, knocking pucks astray, things like that I thought was excellent. And so those are really key moments for Tampa Bay in convincing themselves that they've got to play that way. Blow the zone. Open up the Islanders' gap between their forwards and defense. Don't allow them to get comfortable. So this is your execution of game plan. And if you can get that in, if you can, you know, execute it properly, I like your chances of winning. I mean, this is going to be a 6 or 7-game series most likely. So not too high, not too low. The poise of the Tampa Bay Lightning winning a Stanley Cup, we know, is there. And we've seen the poise of the New York Islanders. So both these teams are not going to get rattled if they get up one or down one. They're just going to keep going with the game plan. And it's all about execution of the game plan.
I think lost in the shuffle with Carey Price and the play of Carey Price and Marc-Andre Fleury is the play of Vasilevskiy. Do you think he's getting his flowers? And how solid do you think he's been so far for Tampa Bay?
You know what? I think there's been some little wrinkles in his game. The fact that he has not been able to, you know, keep a sheet clean early, not get his team playing from behind early. But the Islanders team has handled it well. And the fact that he's come on strong late in games and played really well. And then you got the bobble against Marchand. If anything, Vezina goaltenders have the ability to let bad goals go and move on to the next save. That's what all the best goalies in the history of our game do. And he shows signs of that, that if a bad goal goes in or he makes a mistake or some error in some way that he feels hurt his team, he just comes right back and he starts playing again. I mean, he stopped how many little breakaways and little cuts to the net with his left pad. I just thought when he came back, I thought maybe he's going to be a bit rattled, but he wasn't. And that just shows the kind of player that he is and the kind of focus that he has. And he's definitely worthy of talking about him being in the Vezina conversation. He could have easily been there this year, and nobody, I think, would have blinked.
Has there been anyone for you in this series that's really stood out positively or negatively? I just know that yesterday we talked to Craig Simpson, or maybe it was the day before, and he mentioned that like Josh Anderson just hasn't done anything for a while now. Has there been anyone that has made you think like that team needs that guy better, or that team is really enjoying the play of a surprising player?
Well, I mean, I think every team needs a player to step up at a certain moment in a series, right? I mean, it's not that one player runs the whole series the whole time. It's a matter of different players popping in at different times. You look at the Tampa Bay, you know, Palat last night gets the big goal for them. And Gaudreau has had big goals, and Cirelli. And you look at the Montreal Canadiens and Byron. It is a village that has to accomplish this thing. And I do believe that for Montreal and all the teams that maybe aren't getting production from some guys, you've got to find it from somewhere else. And you can't just go, woe is me. And when Barzal wasn't scoring and it took him 8 games to get going, other guys were chipping in and getting the job done. That's what a team does. It doesn't worry about what the knots are. It worries about what they have, and they keep moving forward. It's like injuries, and Montreal's going to have to deal with those big time now, because even though if Petrie plays or Weber plays, they are far from 100%. And that's a tough team to play against when you're not 100% and they're breathing down your throat.
We'll see that tonight. You couldn't be more right on that one, Gary. We'll close on this one. I want to get your thoughts on something in the Andre Palat goal that made it 2-1. Not the Hedman long bomb pass to Kucherov. Hedman may be the best at that in the game, period. Those tape-to-tape long bomb passes. Not Kucherov buying time, waiting for Palat to catch up, or the goal itself. But the fact that there were 7 Tampa Bay Lightning players on the ice when it happened. Do you have a thought on Tampa having 7 players on the ice at that moment?
Well, obviously a penalty, and they missed it. But I kind of said last night, I think the hockey gods have a way of sometimes evening things up. And, you know, the penalty on point, I think, was a very poor call, too. So I do believe that maybe the goal by Nelson gets offset by the one by Palat, and then everything goes back to center again. You know what I mean? So sometimes that happens. But, I mean, people are going to miss calls. The game is moving fast. Yeah. And in a game when there's so much other things that are going on after the whistle, going into battles, all this stuff, the referee and linesmen have to have their heads on swivels constantly, and sometimes you're not looking for something like that. And Barry Trotz obviously got the video and was able to point that out to them, and I'm sure they've been told by their supervisor that it's a missed call, and I'm sure they were told by the supervisor that it wasn't a penalty on Braden Point. So a tough night for the officials at the end of the day. But I still think a well-played game and things balanced out, and the best team won.
Certainly true. And now we have a game through. The series tied at 1. Gary, thanks so much for this. Enjoy the rest of your day. We really appreciated it.
Are you kidding me, guys? Enjoy the playoffs. They've been great.
Thanks, Gary. There he is, the great Gary Galley from Hockey Night in Canada. I'm alongside John Bartlett covering the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Hey, just one final thought as we go to break here, guys. I'm curious about something. I got a note from someone last night. We were texting back and forth about how physical the series was. And, you know, at the buzzer, there's more scrums and more fights and guys dropping gloves, etc. What do you think would happen? Both you guys played at a high level. What do you think would happen if at the final buzzer, end of the third period, the officials just said, we get paid for 3 periods of hockey and overtime. This is not that. We're leaving. Sort it out yourselves.
Not much different than what happened last game. I didn't see anyone who really wanted to fight.
Stewie, what would happen?
I saw a tweet by somebody saying, I hope Anthony Cirelli is okay. And I think that was from your burner account, because I saw him mixing it up with Zajac. And
he was.
I think, everyone would be upset if Cirelli got hurt. So, no, the refs need to stay in there and do their jobs. Come on, let's go.
I think Zajac got him in a twister, like one of the more unique moves in MMA. I'm like, oh, Cirelli's not looking good going down here.
I think that's one of your drums that you like to beat that I like the most, Jeff. Which is just
What's that
how often guys are posturing in those situations, and it's like, all right, if you want to do it, go ahead. If you don't, can we run along here,
dude? Colby and I, whenever Colby and I are together, we love analyzing scrums. And the one great point. This is such a great point that Colby always points out, and this is more for the younger guys, not the older guys who've done this their whole lives, and they really mean something when they grab someone. If you look at scrums now, guys don't look at each other anymore. They grab on and they kind of look away, because looking in someone's face might mean confrontation. Everyone just sort of grabs and sort of looks up at the stands or looks away because they really don't want to do this.
Right.
Like, have you noticed that? Justin,
only after you mentioned it. Yeah, you can get a pretty good idea of intent within a few seconds.
Paul Stewart used to do that, by the way, when he was a referee, because he hated scrums. He was like, "This is stupid, just a bunch of face washes." And he would pull linesmen out, and he'd say, "Guys, either do it or stop it. But I'm not sending the linesmen in so you can look tough."
Love that.
I always love that. Hit a break. More Hockey Central in moments. Habs and the Knights, the Golden Knights, looking to take a 2-0 series lead against the Montreal Canadiens. We'll talk about that as Hockey Central continues in moments on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Very lively debate about Jamaican patties on the break with Anthony Stewart and our producer, Matt Marchese. That's going to be for one of those off days in the Stanley Cup final. New 30 minutes on Stewie's tour of Toronto through Jamaican patty shops. We only got about a minute, so let's try to get to this as quickly as we can. Stewie, we'll start with you. What do we see tonight? It is game two. It is Vegas, who pretty much did whatever they wanted to the Montreal Canadiens two nights ago. They run it back again tonight.
I think the first goal is very key for the Montreal Canadiens. They got to come out strong, get some of those second, third opportunities, try to get the lead, because they're a different team playing from behind.
Justin?
Sorry, guys. Was I on mute?
Oh, yeah.
I expect Vegas and regulation to handle their business. I'm sorry I'm such a Montreal doubter, but that's just the way I'm born.
Man, Vegas looks good. That third line looks fantastic. As we talked about the other day, holy smokes, is Alex Tuch a player? Like, playoffs always do this for people that don't get a chance to watch a lot of teams, and generally here in this area, it's Western Conference squads, obviously. Man, Tuch looks good every single game. Game two tonight. Puck drops just after 9. Enjoy.